for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Buying a Master Mechanics tool set usually means high prices, higher interest rates, and who knows how many years of monthly payments. But at Gear Wrench, we don't believe that your tools should take years and years to pay for. So check out Mega Mod Master Sets, the Master Mechanics tool sets that deliver pro-quality tools, organized storage solutions, an easy-to-use lifetime warranty, and much, much more. All for thousands less than you'd expect. So don't wait. Explore the sets and check availability now. Only at GearWrench.com.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We are here to recap week 10, that is week 1-0 in SEC play. Feels like we've had a decent bit of separation in the SEC, so that is kind of a big picture topic that will kind of be over everything we talk about today. We'll talk about the individual results, of course, but if you look at the standings, it does feel like we do have a little bit of a, what's the best food metaphor here? It's not like a 7-layer bean dip. It's more like a layer cake, maybe, layers.
Yeah.
So we do have a little bit of separation there. So we'll get into that, the ramifications of that and what have you. But first, before we get into anything, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by Pitch Logic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See pitchlogic.com for more information. All right, Mark. Well, I was conveniently the most interesting series for us to talk about is also the one where I was.
Yeah.
And that was in Lexington, Kentucky for a top five matchup. At the time, number three Kentucky versus number four Tennessee. Those have since flipped in the rankings. By the way, top four teams in the top 25 this week, SEC, A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky. And that's part of why I talk about the separation that we have in the conference, where you've got those four right at the top. I think we think of all four of those teams as Omaha caliber. And then you've got a little bit of a drop off there, but the quality of play this weekend in Lexington was extremely high for those who watched it on TV. Yes, the atmosphere was as good as it sounded and as good as it looked on TV. Two record setting crowds for Kentucky Proud Park. The Friday crowd set a record. The Saturday crowd broke that record. Mm-hmm. The Sunday crowd, I think, fell between the two maybe, but it was definitely still in that neighborhood. Was a lot of fun. And the play on the field was high quality. Like I tweeted this yesterday afterwards that it felt like a super regional, which is an overused cliche, but I think it really holds true for this one, because it wasn't just that the teams were good. It was also that the way the coaching staffs used their pitching, the way the coaching staffs played the chess match, like there was an urgency about the series that you don't necessarily always see for a mid to late April series. Yeah. So there was just kind of like an.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
It certainly had that big game vibe to it, right? All three games did. And, you know, you don't always get that in April. And so even between top five teams, when we sometimes get those, and it's three quarters full, and it's not just that, hey, can't miss event, right? That's bigger than, it's not just a college baseball game. It's the, in place to be. And that's what we want, right? You want those great atmospheres. You want those showcases for the sport. And that's what Kentucky and Tennessee gave us this weekend. On the field, I think the thing that surprised me the most is just how offensive the series was, especially on Sunday. Not that it was offensive, but to the level. Once Tennessee gets cranking on offense, I don't know how you pitch to them. I mean, that was a really, really impressive display on Sunday. And, it overshadowed what Kentucky did, because they had six home runs and lost, Joe. Yeah. I mean, this is what – you know, we made the bunning small joke. Well, those are done, man. I've got to come up with new material because Kentucky can swing it. That is a really, really challenging offense to pitch to. And they have been pitching pretty well. I think, you know, a lot of teams are going to struggle to pitch against Tennessee. So, I'm not that worried about their pitching. I mean, Nyman, I don't know what happened. You were there. Was he just not locating? Just wasn't his day? But that was, you know, surprising, obviously. And that was a game that Kentucky just kind of needed to flush. They got off such a bad start. But, with Tennessee, the pitching is okay. It's not incredible. You know, it's kind of funny to say because Tennessee's had some really good staffs recently. I don't know that anybody truly scares you. But, you know, there's some pretty good dudes there. And I do think that they've got pieces, especially if they're on that day, that they can stack up with anybody. And because their offense is so explosive, they don't have to be that good. They just have they need length, right? And to be able to keep themselves in the games and just let their offense go from there.
Yeah, with Nyman, it was a very small zone that day. And when you're someone who doesn't have premium stuff and you're forced to put the ball more over the plate than you're comfortable with, I think that's what can happen. It was a small zone for Drew Beam too, but Drew Beam has a little bit better stuff, has more experience in games like this. Like he just had every advantage to be able to navigate it. And Beam didn't even have like a great day. So he struggled with it too, but Nyman just couldn't cope with it. And he was out of the game before he recorded and out. Tennessee came out as the better team here. And I think there's two big factors. One is kind of related to what I was just saying, which is, you know, Kentucky has pitched well, but they don't have the stuff that Tennessee has in some regards. And, you know, Kentucky doesn't strike out much, which is one of the best things about their offense. But on some level, especially if the zone is small or the ball is flying out, you just can't give up a lot of contact. Like on some level, on days when the ball is flying or the zone sucks or whatever, you got to just be able to shove it past somebody. And Kentucky doesn't really do a lot of that. Like that's just not what their pitching staff is necessarily about. And Tennessee took advantage when Kentucky pitchers had to come into the zone more than they wanted. Kentucky pitchers had to throw a lot of pitches to get out, so on and so forth. Tennessee just had more stuff and was able to navigate that a little bit better because they were able to bring some guys, even out of the bullpen, who just had the ability to get it past guys. AJ Causey in relief in the first game of the series, Aaron Combs in the second game of the series are just two examples. The other thing is what you mentioned, and that's that I'll use Sunday's game as an example. You know, Grant Smith hits a two-run homer late in the game. I think it's like the seventh inning. And that puts Kentucky up 8-7. And it's just like, well, that's cool, but like 8 is not going to win this game. Right. And that's an absurd thing to say, you know, even on a Sunday, that 8 is not going to win the game. Like I turned to the guys next to me, some of the Tennessee beat writers actually were sitting next to me. And I was like, it's going to take 10 or 11. And it did, right? I mean, they ended up, Kentucky scored 11. So Tennessee needed more than 11 to get the win. And so Tennessee's offense is such that it's like, you need your best effort and then sometimes to win a game when the ball's really flying, when offenses are feeling it, it just feels like in those types of games, with the exception of maybe A&M, which they're not going to play in the regular season, with the exception of maybe A&M, there's just no offense in the country like Tennessee's that's in a place to basically win every game that plays out like that. Like I don't have a lot of confidence in any other lineup being able to go punch for punch with Tennessee when you end up in a game like that against them.
Yeah. I mean, the only way is, you know, you've got such good pitching that type of game never happens. Right. And certainly we've seen teams be able to do that to Tennessee, but once they get rolling, man, I don't know. I mean, that's a scary lineup. I mean, much like what A&M does to people, and they did it to Alabama over the weekend. But it is a shame those two teams don't play, because I would love to have a windshield replacement dealership, because that would be the business to have if those two teams play.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, and I guess at the Hoover Met, all the parking is kind of behind Mm-hmm. You know, the play, you know,
yeah.
Right. So there, yeah, you can't really take advantage there. Thankfully, my future rental car here in about a month is grateful that the parking is that direction, not the other one. Yeah. So just a fun series. I think it's going to be one of those series where at the end, like, this is a big time feather in the cap for Tennessee. But I think both teams come out of the series, at least my takeaway from it was, hey, these are both, it doesn't guarantee you get to Omaha, right? All kinds of stuff happens. Just ask Tennessee, for example, 2022 Tennessee, right? So it doesn't guarantee anything, but these are both teams that could end the season in Omaha. Like, I feel very certain of that. That is on the table. And hey, if they give us games like this, like, let's do that a few more times. Why don't we, you know?
I mean, watching it, I was thinking, okay, there are not a whole lot of teams better than these two. I mean, maybe it's A&M and Arkansas and I mean, maybe some others. Maybe some others can on the right day, but you know, over the long haul, those look like the top four to me.
I am absolutely with you there. A decent plug here. We will find out if they're the top four seeded teams later this week on the Nerdcast. If you're not listening to the Nerdcast with Kendall and Aaron and Mark, Mark is kind of the ringleader of it. Aaron is a strong contributor and Kendall sometimes zones out for 15, 20 minutes at a time, but that's kind of part of why we love him.
Yeah. He's been better this year. So he's due for a zone out. He's going to be breaking a coaching search while we're.
That's right. Game. True. Yes. There'll be more going on as the season goes on, but you're right. Kendall's been locked in the first two. He's in midseason form. Let's move on to Florida and Vanderbilt, Mark. And before we get to the results of the weekend, we had a little bit of a scandal, seems too strong of a word, but a little situation.
Kerfuffle.
And I was actually, there you go. I was actually kind of unaware of this. And by kind of unaware, I mean unaware of this because I was at my own game, right? And I was writing about that game. And the next morning I went to go on Weekend Waypoints, my weekend video show. And somebody commented, like, talk about the cheaters at Vanderbilt. And I was like, what is this? What on earth are we talking about? Like, I thought it might've been just some sort of, like, I don't know, kooky internet conspiracy theory thing. Right. And then a couple of the commenters that comment very frequently on it were like, no, it was a sticky substance situation. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is a real thing. And then of course I look it up and, you know, it's JD Thompson, who was the midweek starter for a long time, dealt with an injury. Now he's back and was getting a weekend start. And Mark, why don't you, since you kind of were more tuned to this as it was happening.
Yeah.
So give us kind of the facts of the case, if you will.
Well, he was pitching pretty well. Vandy was up 2-1 in the fourth when this happened. And Florida head coach Kevin O'Sullivan brought it to the attention of the umpires in the delicate way that only he can, that Thompson had been going to his forearm and the camera zoomed in on his forearm and you could see it was discolored. It was kind of a brownish thing. It looked like a bruise, honestly, is what it looked like. And so, you know, you're messing with a bruise, you know, you touching that. If it's a bruise, okay, well, maybe it hurts, right? I mean,
it'd be a little weird to be poking at it if it was a bruise.
Right. But maybe it's, you know, you're tight there or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's on his glove hand. So then the umpires walked out and looked at it. And you could see him mouth, it's rosin. You can see Thompson say that. And they checked it. And, you know, the rule is you can take the rosin from the bag, but you can't apply it somewhere else on your body and then use it as a de facto bag, right? So they ejected him. So, of course, Vandy goes nuts. And it's basically, you know, what they're coaching staff was yelling from the bench, you know, it's, hey, it's sunscreen and rosin. Okay. So, you know, it was a warm day and it just, that's just the way it was, but that's the rule. And for a pitcher, if you're ejected, that's four games, man. So that he would be out for the midweek plus, you know, the entire weekend series. The second weird part of that whole deal is that when, Vandy went to the bullpen, brought in the freshman phenom McIlvain, and he tweaked something in his bat during the warm-up pitches and never threw an official pitch. So he left, And then they're bringing in, you know, the third pitcher to face the same batter. It's still in the same at bat. And Florida goes on to win the game. Basically, Tyler Shelnut went off. He had a three-run homer in like the fifth inning, and then had a two-run double late, eighth or ninth, something like that. And that was really the margin in the game. And incidentally, that was the game that Florida won, was the one that Jack Caglione did not homer in. You know, he tied the NCAA record with home runs in nine consecutive games, and then finally it was snapped, you know, in the finale. I think he had a couple of hits. No, he had a single and they walked him twice, including intentionally in his last at bat that could have kept the streak going, which, you know, for those of us at home, we kind of wanted to see him swing it. So anyway, but for Florida, they lost that series. So they're kind of in a tailspin here. They've got to figure some things out because they're only one game over 500 overall. They're 20-19, 15 games left. So, you know, I wasn't incredible at math, but I do think that 8-7 is the sweet spot in those 15 games to make sure that you're above 500, because you are going to play at least one in Hoover. So that would be the deal. And that's just the minimum, right? That's just eligibility. It doesn't guarantee you're going to get in. So if they were to be over 500 and maybe get to 13 SEC wins, which is what, you know, my 8-7 thing, if they win all their midweek games, which is a, you know, it's not guaranteed, then that would get them in that range, and they would go into Hoover with an excellent shot, right? You win one, you feel like you're in. If you don't win one, and then you got to sweat the bubble with half the other teams in the country. So, meanwhile, Vanderbilt continues to play really well at home. They're swinging the bats well. I like what they do offensively. We all know what they have potentially on the mound. They've just got to take that same thing when they go on the road and be able to win games in different ways, right? Because they're made for that ballpark. That lineup is really good at home. And if they can find ways to do that on the road, then, oh boy, Vanderbilt's got a shot to climb right in there, host, maybe even, you know, sneak into that flirt with that top eight thing. Or they could probably, you know, tread water and be right on that 1-2 line, right? Are they going to host? Are they going to be a two seed somewhere? They'd be a scary one, but if they can play at home, that's with the way they're playing this year, that's the path for them, because it would be hard to see them going in and just, you know, facing, especially an offensive club, it would be hard to see them going in and just, you know, just bludgeoning somebody on the road.
Yeah, Vanderbilt 22-4 at home, 3-7 on the road this year. Cool. So yeah, that's pretty stark difference there, especially when you consider it's a team that's, you know, ranked in the top 15. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not an also ran theoretically we're talking about here. The Florida part of this is interesting to me because it involves a couple of variables that we don't often have to contend with SEC teams, which is, A, for those who don't know, you have to finish over 500 to be an at-large team, yep, like by rule.
One game
so, over. Right. So that's not something we normally have to deal with SEC teams, just because typically you're taking care of basically all of your non-conference, right? Like I use the example of A&M this year. A&M's only four losses have come in conference games. So it's usually not a problem. For Florida, right, it is. The second is their RPI is 35, which is fine if the record's good enough. But as you've talked about a lot on the Nerdcast, Mark, like on some level, it's like a little bit of a sliding scale where the closer your RPI gets to say 40 or 45, the more you need to start to think about, okay, maybe we need to win 15 games in the SEC, right? Because the teams that have won 14, or I think Mizzou one year was 15, but their RPI was like well off. But, you know, teams that have those RPIs that are a little more borderline, 13 plus that kind of RPI is not likely to do it. So the worse off your RPI is, the more you need to try to push to get to about 500 in the league, because the combination of borderline RPI plus under 500 is going to be a tough sell, even for the biggest, most ardent SEC supporter in that committee room. Like to sell an under 500 conference record with a borderline RPI. So I think 35 RPI is not bad. I think that's not that much of an issue now, but it is something to watch, especially if Florida ends up losing another midweek game or two at some point down the road.
Yeah. I agree, man. I mean, it's to go to your point, Georgia in 2011, they were 16-14 in the league and they were 30-29 overall. And they got in at, you know, is one of the last teams in the field with that one game over 500, but it is rare for that to happen. I don't have the RPI in front of me, but I will have it when I get a second to look it up. But it's kind of one of those things where it's going to be Florida could be a team that no one wants to see show up because they have all that talent. And if they put it together, they're, you know, they go on a run and it'd be like the Ole Miss story. Right from a few years ago, last team in. Well, they're the last team playing too. So it's not that, but right now they're not playing like it. So, you know, nobody's scared of Florida right now. You're scared of Cags, but you're not really scared of anybody else because they're just not playing at a high enough level consistently. And as a result, they're going to have trouble getting, you know, getting to those marks to be able to get into the tournament. So. It's fascinating though, you know, for folks like us who love to watch it at a distance, it's one of the, for me, one of the most intriguing storylines as we head down, you know, into May.
Yeah. I'll give you a second to look up the RPI stuff because one of the next teams we're going to talk about, Bama, is kind of in a similar position where they're going to have to watch some of the RPI and record machinations. They played A&M over the weekend. They were supposed to be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. Thursday did not happen, so it's doubleheader Friday, game Saturday. They jump out to a 5-0 lead in the first game of the doubleheader, end up losing 10-5. That's not great. They do salvage a game, though, at the end of the weekend, and so you can be a little disappointed if you're an Alabama supporter that we were up 5-0. If we just hold on to that lead and everything else goes the same, we win that series, and we're maybe one of the first teams ever to beat the number. I mean, it may have been the first time. I would not have been shocked. I don't have the date on this, but it's hard to imagine there have been that many other teams that have beaten the number one team in the country in a series 2 weekends in a row. That's got to be, right. If not never happened, that's exceedingly rare, right? So, but they do salvage a game. And if you take the bigger picture of it, 3-3 versus Arkansas and A&M, even if they're both home series, like you'll take that given who you were facing there. And so they're in a situation where they're in really good shape with a 20 RPI as we sit right now. They've got winnable series in front of them. Their RPI might sag a little bit because of that. But mm-hmm. I say all that to say, if their RPI hangs out in the low 20s or even the mid 20s, they're in a situation where 13 might do it, right? I mean, there's precedent here too. The 21 Alabama team, was it, Mark, that went 12-19 in the league?
17.
Or 12. Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah. And 12-17 in the league and got in with a 24 RPI or some right. such. So those are just that's another data point here in this discussion is, you know, Alabama's in a little bit of a different position than Florida. Florida on paper, in terms of the conference record, is in better shape, but in the overall health of the resume, you could make the argument that Alabama is actually in a better spot.
Yeah. Well, you look at Alabama and they played 12 games against the top four teams in the country. I mean, they went 5-7 in those games. That's, you can, you know, it's pretty challenging. Of course, you know, they're all at home, but still those were, well, other than Kentucky was on the road. Three were at home. So it's one of those teams that they're a shell of what we thought they would be because their pitching has just not been, you know, Ben Hess has not pitched up to par. Riley Quick got hurt. Aiden Moza, I mean, he's not even part of the pitching staff much anymore. I mean, he's on the team, but he's not in a vital role. And that those were going to be three of the best starters we thought in any rotation. So, but On the flip side, their offense has been really good. I mean, Cade Snell has emerged as one of the, during SEC play, one of the best hitters in the conference. I think he's hit 400 in SEC games, and hitting for some power. And Gage Miller's had a big year. So that's a lineup that can give people problems, and it's deep, which, you know, not everyone has. So they're an intriguing team if they could get to a regional and they figure out how to win games away from home, because their road to hosting is challenging. They could be a team that could, you know, that could surprise some people just because of the way they swing it. Now on the A&M side, kind of like what we talked about with Tennessee, once they get rolling, man, I don't know how you pitch to them. I mean, I cannot wait to see them against Arkansas, you know, in that final series of the year. That will be amazing because Arkansas can pitch to them. So, but something's got to give. So the other thing I'd say about A&M is that they've been able to get pitching contributions from different guys. And it's just a question of, are they going to be consistent enough? Do they have enough to mix and match? Because, you know, Prager's been really good. Jones has been pretty good on, you know, game two, especially lately. He's been better than Lamkin, who's had kind of four, you know, had that great start against Mississippi State, and since then he has not been good. And he got knocked out in the second inning for the second straight week this week. So I'm wondering if maybe A&M switches it up. I'm going out there this weekend, so that'll be something I'll, you know, ask about while I'm there. Just, you know, what's going on with him? Because he, no one questions his arm. He's a heck of a talent. And was really good earlier this year. So, but then offensively, Grahovac, Laviolette, Montgomery, and then it keeps going from there. When I saw them against Florida, I was talking about this in one of our internal chats. The bottom of their lineup wasn't that scary. Now, the top was fierce. The middle was pretty good, but then it really dropped off. And since then, they've got some new players have emerged. It's tough 1-9, man. It's great at the top, but it didn't really slack off a lot. And those guys are now on base when those top guys come up, and that is, for me, has just changed how scary that A&M lineup is to pitch to.
Yeah, they're right there. Like Tennessee, it feels like with in comparing lineups, Tennessee and A&M is like splitting hairs at this point. You know, between the two. So yeah, just there, and those two teams are going to try to win games similarly that, you know, I like A&M's pitching better at this point. I mean, I do have my concerns, you know, Lampkin, Jones has been better. So you like that, but A&M's bullpen is better than Tennessee's, given that Tennessee has had to shift things around. There's some guys, you know, frankly, in the rotation or in different roles that I think maybe they'd prefer them not be. Whereas A&M has been able to kind of stick with the same guys, right? I mean, this is the rotation they've ridden with all season. You know, the Prager, Jones, and Lampkin, and then the bullpen, they, you know, it's Aschenbeck and it's Sadeo, and it's, you know, they really know who they are on the pitching staff in a way that Tennessee still feels like it's trying to figure out. And some of that's been, you know, the AJ Russell injury and what have you. But yeah, in terms of the way they go about winning games, it is very similar. And, you know, the beat goes on for A&M, certainly has kind of proven themselves to be the playing the best right now of any team in the country. Mm-hmm. The team that was playing the best is Arkansas. They took on South Carolina last weekend. They win 2 out of 3. I think both sides of this are interesting. If you're Arkansas, it's okay. The thought is, okay, we've righted the ship here, right? We didn't let one series loss turn into two. You know, we did our thing. Hagen Smith pitched great. Brady Tigert pitched well. We did lose a game, but hey, it's a road series. So, you know, losing a game is not egregious in any way, shape or form. So they took care of business. And if you're South Carolina, I think you look at it and say, okay, we got a game against the number two team in the country. And that kind of keeps them on pace. I think somebody in one of my weekend waypoints videos, I think put it well that, you know, South Carolina is just a bang on above average team, right? They're just, they beat the teams they should beat. They they don't get swept against the toughest teams. They take care of business at home for the most part, but they're not, but they're not really like pushing that next boundary. Right. So in this series, they did take care of business and got at least a win out of the series, which, you know, keeps them on course to obviously be a postseason team. And then, hey, if you really want to dream on it, this team is still theoretically a team that could host if they get hot down the stretch. So, you know, not getting swept in that series this past weekend was a big deal.
Yeah. I think hosting is still in play for them. I mean, they're going to need to, you know, maybe win a series that they'll be underdogs in, but you know, I didn't know how they would do it down in Florida and they won that series. So I think, you know, Kentucky comes there, you know, Kentucky's, you know, maybe it's a tough road game. You know, maybe they can get that one. They've got Georgia in there. That's, you know, that's another tough series. It could kind of go either way. They win the right ones and the RPI stays, you know, in respectable place. Yeah, they could absolutely host. And I think that, you know, and they're a team that with the right draw, I mean, they drew Florida last year or else, heck, they could have been an Omaha club. So I think this is a similar type of team. If they get stuck with one of these SEC juggernauts on the road, probably not. But if they get stuck, you know, if they draw somebody else, they can absolutely make a run at this thing. I think that the thing for them is it's been kind of a revolving door in the rotation. You've had kind of the same guys, but maybe not 2 weeks in a row or 3 weeks in a row. And where does that land? Can they find somebody to kind of step forward and be that consistent guy you can count on? You know, it's Eli Jones has been good, but after that, you know, who's next. Right. And that's that to me, cause I think their offense, while it's, you know, they drove so many walks and they do hit, you know, they do hit some home runs. It's just okay. Kind of, and maybe that's what your comment was about. I mean, they don't do anything great, but they get on base a lot and they make pitchers work and they've been able to, you know, had some clutch hits, you know, late in games, things like that. And that'll carry you a long way.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, they're just not, if you ask me, what's the most elite part of South Carolina's team? I'd be like, because they don't really have any sort of obvious glaring weakness, right? Mm-hmm. The rotation, they've got a good one in Eli Jones. And then typically in a given weekend, they'll get something decent from somebody else. Now that somebody has changed a lot as the year has gone on. And in the bullpen, okay, you don't have Evan Auchinbeck or Griffin Herring necessarily, but you know, Garrett Gainey's had some really good outings. Ty Good has had some good outings. Chris Veach has had, you know, and then offensively, yeah, it's like, okay, this isn't Tennessee or A&M, but they've got some guys who can hurt you. I mean, Ethan Petrie and Cole Messina are two of the best hitters in the conference.
Only for anybody.
Right, exactly. So yeah, it's just like they're perfectly solid in every single aspect of the game, and that'll win you a lot of games, and that's why they are about 500 in the league and in a position to do some of the things they're doing. On the flip side of it, Arkansas just they're still winning games, and it's just kind of this weird like narrative loop we're in where like the offense for Arkansas is probably not changing at this point. They just are who they are. And I tend to continue to come down on the side of, look, would they love for the offense to be more physical? Sure. Like, I don't think they'd turn that down, but we keep worrying or pointing to an eventuality that may not really happen, right? Like, as long as the pitching stays healthy and performs even in the neighborhood of how well it's performed so far. And look, some of the things about this pitching staff are starting to slip a little bit. You know, Will McIntyre has not been as unhittable as he was the first 6-7 weeks of the season, right? You know, Mason Molina has slipped a little bit from where he was.
Walking too many guys.
He's walking too many guys. So there are little cracks in the foundation here and there that you can point to, but they're still mostly healthy. They still have a lot of options. So if I'm an Arkansas fan, like I'm not going to waste my energy being overly worried about something that that just doesn't seem like it's going to come to pass necessarily. I mean, this is not, you know, Arkansas has had a lot better offenses, and maybe that's part of why this comparison looks so poor. But I mean, look at the bottom of the league and understand that like Arkansas is a much more functional offense than some of those other teams. So I just think it's the way they're built. And this is the way they win games. And like, I mean, they're 34-6 overall. Like I think they're just fine, you know?
And how about that? We kind of take it for granted just how good Hagan Smith is. I mean,
yeah,
everybody has a bad day, right? And since that opening start when it was, you know, 20 degrees, he's been just lights out every time out. It's been a couple of days where he hadn't had a ton of strikeouts, but he's putting up zeros. He's limiting hits. He's not really walking a lot of guys. And you remember last year his deal was, you know, he didn't go that deep in games because his pitch count was up, but he's been much more efficient. All the starts I've seen, they could have left him in there, right? And they're pulling him earlier with, you know, the end goal in mind. And obviously I love that, especially when you have a deep staff like that. You want him fresh at the end. And I think that's a big reason why, you know, he hadn't had any of these, you know, give up 4 and 5 runs. Like even Skeens had a couple games like that last year. So, and you know, I may have just jinxed Hagan, sorry, man, but he hasn't, you know, since that opener where he only threw an inning in, you know, in Hoth, right?
Yeah,
he's Star Wars reference for anyone who.
Okay, yeah, I was just gonna let it go. Like I had nothing on that. I was like, maybe I didn't hear him. Like I'll just nod and then we'll move on. So yeah. No, I'm glad you called it out though for the Star Wars fans among them, or for the not Star Wars fans, you now.
Be like, what's this nerd talking longer about, right?
Exactly. Yeah, listeners may not know this. Merck, bit of a Star Wars guy, bit of a nerd in that regard.
Yeah.
So, you know, were you a big action figures guy?
I had them all, man. I had as many as my parents would buy me. I had them.
Mm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had the Millennium Falcon. You know, the big thing. It was like this big, and you could, you know, put Han Solo and Chewbacca in there. Oh, it was big time.
I was living. If only you had those, like, and nobody's going to do this, especially as a kid, but I wonder what those figures are worth still in the packaging.
Oh,
the originals, you know? One.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. Santa but again, play like, with mine, so I was.
Yeah, stuck. Like what, you know, like what pre, you know, yeah, what pre-adolescent child is going to choose to, I'm just going to leave them in the boxes. Regardless. Yeah, Hagan Smith has yet to throw more than 6 innings in every start, and as a matter of fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times he's thrown exactly 6 innings. So it is a very concerted effort by DVH and Matt Hobbs to say, like, look, we're just not, we could push him. Like I'm sure there's at least one game or probably multiples. He could have thrown a complete game, but they were just like, we're just not doing that. So you like that. He's only thrown over 100 pitches twice and the most was 105. So, you know, those are pretty reasonable numbers there. And yeah, it's easy to kind of just look at like last week example of like South Carolina. It's like 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 11 strikeouts, ho-hum. But like, no, that's objectively an excellent outing, especially in today's college baseball where very, very few pitchers are getting out of starts with fewer than 3 or 4 runs scored, right?
Yeah, and so, that was on the road against a ranked team.
Right, exactly, yes.
We're totally taking it for granted, at least. Yeah. So we're trying to call it out. I mean, this is not normal, what this cat's doing.
Exactly.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Hey, guys. Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams. Now celebrating 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams is the originator of everyone's favorite Luxe Home blanket. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 6 times. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as its ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are each made with premium materials. Get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code PODCAST15.
All right, let's move on to LSU and Mizzou. The LSU side of this, probably the most fascinating part of it, just felt like, man, for me, this series is a little bit of an inkblot test if you're an LSU fan, where you can take whatever you want from it, right? Mm-hmm. So they win the series, and it was on the road, and we've seen already this year, just ask Florida, going to Columbia, Missouri, not exactly the easiest thing in the world to do.
Right.
So on one hand, you can look at it as, hey, look, you know, we won the series. We did what we needed to do to kind of get back on track. We've got some winnable series in front of us. Let's just get the trains back on the tracks, right? So I could see that. A more pessimistic fan might look at it and say, okay, but we lost a game. And then, like, it's not like outside of the opener, they did blow the doors off Mizzou in the opener. But in that Sunday finale, like, that was a 2-2 game into, like, the sixth inning. Like, it wouldn't have taken a miracle for Mizzou to win that game.
Yeah.
And we're really in trouble. So I think a pessimistic fan could look at it and say, well, we didn't really score a bunch of runs the last 2 days of the series, and we really left a lot to chance on Sunday. I tend to fall more on the, like, hey, man, you won the series. You had to win the series. Would you have liked to sweep? Sure. But I think on the spectrum, I think I'm closer to the, like, hey, we got the trains back on the tracks. Let's see what happens from here. That tends to be where I fall on it.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the bright side. Okay, Gage Jump, that was his best college performance. It was he was really good. Griffin Herring is just absolutely dealing. He's got the best ERA in SEC games in the conference of anybody, even Hagan Smith. He's been really lights out. LSU won its first conference series, and it was on the road. And they won the game, they won 2 games that Luke Holman didn't pitch. Okay. And that had been kind of the only way they can win before is, and he had maybe his worst game of the year. So you expect him to bounce back. And if the other guys pitch well, then okay. Then you're feeling pretty good about it. I think, you know, Ashton Larson had a big weekend. He's emerging, you know, as a, really a force in that lineup, so lengthening it, and LSU's got a chance now. It's still some pretty long odds, but they're at least they got a puncher's chance to get back in this. The thing is, they've got Auburn this weekend. If they sweep Auburn, they're in great shape. You know, they kind of won it. You expect them to win 2 at home and win 1 on the road the rest of the way. Well, you got to make up some ground because of what you get the hole that you're in if they get a sweep, and then they've got to win either the A&M series at home or the Alabama series on the road. Okay, they got to get one of those two. They don't have to have them both, but they got to get one of those, and they can get swept, right? And then that would set up for all the marbles. They host Ole Miss in the final weekend of the year, and both teams could be playing for their future. And I kind of expect that's what's going to happen. And then, you know, the winner of that series got a shot, right, to get an at-large bid. And the loser probably doesn't, unless they go on a Hoover, you know, they get to Saturday or something in Hoover you know, depending on what the bubble looks like. But that's kind of, that's the way I envision this playing out. So LSU kept themselves in it. They didn't, you know, a sweep would have kind of put them a game up of what I just described and made it a little easier path. But losing that series would have made it so you got to win both of those that I talked about, or you got to get extra sweeps. And that's, you know, like we talked about last week, LSU just hasn't been consistent enough to get sweeps, and which is, and we saw that, you know, this weekend in Columbia. And how about Missouri? That's a team that some of us, you know, weren't sure how many conference games they were going to win. And they continue, especially at home, to just fight and claw. And Carrick's got something there with those players. Once they recruit, you know, and bring in more of what they have, you know, that's a team that's going to be a hard out.
No doubt about it. I mean, after starting off 1-8 in conference play, they're 5-4 in the mm-hmm. last nine. Yeah. And they've just been perfectly competitive. And I think Missouri fans, as much as you want to win every game, and Carrick Jackson preaches it, like their motto is now, which is no opportunity wasted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're big on the now, and I get that, and I'm sure they believe that, but I think we can also look at it and say that this year is not about this year necessarily. And so I think at this point, like really anything else they do almost feels like gravy to me, that the fact that they're going to end up with probably, you know, 7-8 conference wins, like that's not a good record. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you about it, but there were, you know, and we're all looking for the people who thought this, but you know, there were those out there who thought that maybe like, oof, this could be historically rough. I mean, yeah. And like to give ourselves, because jokes aside, Mark and I had conversations about that. But I think it's fair when you consider that this is a team that, you know, lost multiple games to Purdue, Fort Wayne, and lost a series to Northern Kentucky. If you can lose those, then it suggests that like things could get really rough in SEC play. And this team has just gotten better. Like that's the long and the short of it. Obviously still an extremely flawed team, especially offensively, but they've gotten better. And so that does bode well for at least their trajectory. We'll have to see what the end result of this is, but the trajectory is still, I think in the right direction. So yeah, kudos to them for sure. Okay. Mississippi State and Auburn. This was a sweep for Mississippi State, and talk about kind of having to have it. Cause I sensed, Mark, and you can tell me, but I sensed that coming off of losing a series to Ole Miss, that there was a decent bit of pessimism, not so much in the program, but just kind of observers of the program, fans of the program, that, like maybe we aren't that much better than we thought we were. Like, cause you can nitpick all day, right? Like you can go back and say, well, everybody got really excited about a series win against LSU, but look where LSU is, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can play that game all day. So I think to go out and sure it's Auburn, last place team, but to go and sweep it, like I do think will allow some folks to take a big deep breath and say, okay, and now you're sitting at 10-8 in the league. That's tied for fifth. So I think it was just kind of like we talk about stealing games in the schedule. Mm-hmm. By sweeping, you stole a game there, and it puts Mississippi State back on track where, like, barring, you know, a collapse down the stretch, you still feel pretty good about this. This is probably going to be a regional team. So you can at least take a deep breath and worry less about that.
Yeah. Well said. I think, you know, with what Steven is doing, you can make a case behind Hagan Smith. He's the second best starter in the conference. He's there. I mean, he's certainly in the discussion, and Sange is not far behind him. I mean, they were both really good this weekend, and you know, they got enough offensively. They're moving some guys around. Ethan Pulliam has moved in at second base. Monty Larry is now DHing, and that seemed to give them a little bit of a spark. Bryce Chance has been hitting the ball really well. And it's a team with more options offensively. You know, that was the thing early in the year. They were pretty good near the top and the middle of the lineup, and then the bottom was just a crater. And now it's more productive. And as a result, the offense looks better. Imagine that. You have more than six guys hitting, and wow, there's men on base when those good hitters
funny how that works.
Come up, yeah. So that to me is probably the biggest thing, and just finding the right guys. And you know, like we've talked about with some of the other teams, it may not be those guys forever. It could be some others, but right now they're in pretty good shape to get back in this thing and maybe even have a chance to, you know, if things fall right, to even get in the host discussion. And then you look at Auburn, and this was a team, they actually pitched pretty well this weekend. Granted, they had four fewer innings to fill because they had the seven-inning doubleheader on Sunday, but they didn't pitch badly. They kept themselves in the game, but their offense is just abysmal right now. With a lineup that early in the year was just mashing, they've had some injuries, they've had some guys underperform or slump, and right now it's looking bad. You know, it's just two SEC wins at this point. And the schedule is, you know, when you're the team looking up at everybody, everybody's a tough team. And everybody's thinking, oh yeah, we can't wait to see that last place team. And that's where Auburn is right now. And they've got to find some offense. I mean, they pitched well enough to keep them in games. They just couldn't mount anything. And I know Mississippi State has some good arms, but everybody's got, you know, somebody like that. So it's just one of those years. And, you know, we've talked about it offline. Somebody, their season just kind of falls apart, and maybe it's Auburn's turn this year because it's the time is running out for them to even make it to Hoover. Okay. So they've got to go to LSU and make some noise, or else, you know, then it's just get ready for next year.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like we did talk about that offline, just the every year there's somebody that is bad that we didn't expect to be bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like last year was Ole Miss, year before it was Mississippi State. I'm looking back at 2021's standings here. 2021, I don't remember exactly what we perceived A&M to be. Or maybe it was Auburn again that year, because Auburn went 10-20 in the league in 2021. Yeah. Injury is a big part of that. But regardless, there's always a team that this happens to. A couple of things that you mentioned that caught my attention that I looked up to put some numbers behind. One, you mentioned hosting with Mississippi State. And I agree with you generally, but it is worth noting that like their path is pretty narrow. Like looking at the Boyd's World RPI needs, which of course does not take into account SEC tournament. So there is a little something they could do there. Basically, they'd have to go undefeated to finish top 16. So again, and that's not an exact science, right? Things could move, but it does tell you that like they're basically going to have to get crazy hot to get the RPI in that neighborhood.
Conference wins would be how they would get there. Because, yeah. I mean, you've had SEC teams host with, you know, 18 conference wins, something like that, right? With RPIs in the 20s. Arkansas did it a couple of years ago. So you can get there, but it is, you know, it's a narrow, you know, path, complicated, as you mentioned. Yeah.
And then have you seen the stat, Mark? Do you know what Cal Stevens conference ERA is? I don't.
It's like fourth in the conference, something like that. It's up there high.
Third in the conference, 1.98.
Yeah.
1.98 in conference. Incredible. 36 and a third innings pitched, 41 strikeouts, 10 walks for Cal Steven. A heck of a conference season. You also mentioned Bryce Chance, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Chance is 10th in the SEC in batting at .373 in conference play.
Yeah.
Those are a couple guys that, I mean, Steven's been a part of it since the beginning, but you know, Bryce Chance kind of has had some ebbs and flows this year. So getting him to be somebody who's contributing at that level feels like a little bit of found money, if you will, for the Mississippi State lineup.
Agree.
Let's wrap by talking about, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I just said I agree. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Ole Miss and Georgia. Mm-hmm. Georgia wins the series 2-1. So Ole Miss kind of feels a little like a missed opportunity. I mean, yes, this was a series in Athens and road series are difficult, so on and so forth. But if you're Ole Miss, like, again, to your point, when you're sitting near the bottom of the conference, you know, the number of series that feel winnable is pretty small. And this one felt like a series that was winnable, right? Mm-hmm. And so to not get it, is tough because you felt like if Ole Miss had won that series 1 week after winning the Mississippi State series, it might kind of change the way we and internally things feel at Ole Miss, right? That, okay, this isn't just that, okay, maybe we'll make Hoover, but it's more like, oh, maybe there's a path forward for us to actually be a postseason team. Anyway, that does not happen. And now with Georgia, I'm kind of fascinated. We talked about this offline too. Like, don't look now, but Georgia's got a really interesting postseason resume. 11 RPI as we sit and record today, 7-8 versus Quad One. Mm-hmm. So this is probably a team that's a little bit off the radar. I mean, we've got them ranked, so they're not totally off the radar. But for, I think, a lot of casual fans that maybe are very in tune to A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, they're familiar with Vanderbilt, they know LSU's struggling, like they have the top line storylines in the SEC, mm-hmm. might not be in tune to the fact that, hey, right now, Georgia is definitely a regional team. And yeah. if they can just keep their head above water and SEC play the rest of the way, they're probably going to host. And that's something I just don't, it snuck up on me, I guess, is what I'm saying. When I looked at the data this morning and saw, oh, an 11 RPI for Georgia, I was definitely taken aback a little bit.
Yeah, low teens RPI. If they can get to 16 conference wins, they're going to host.
They're there, basically.
That was
the Kentucky formula last year.
Yeah. So, and Alabama too, for that matter. So I do think that, you know, with Georgia, I mean, Charlie Condon did it again. I mean, he went, what, 5 for 6 in one of the games with a couple of home runs. I mean, what more can the cat do? I mean, he's really, really playing at a high level and consistent. Right. Pitching wise, you know, Georgia got a couple of guys back on Sunday. I'm blanking on
Hoskins and Goldstein.
Yeah, and then Goldstein, who'd been, you know, their Friday guy for much of the year. And then Brian Zeldin has emerged as one of the top relievers in the conference, man. He's just, you know, he's a multi-inning guy, multi-days, just a rubber arm. And throwing a curveball, man, and it's a good one.
Somebody on the Georgia broadcast threw the comp out there. You'll remember this name, Mark. Somebody on the Georgia broadcast threw out the comparison that he's like Zach Kristofak from Georgia a few years back, like kind of a short righty. Like he's listed at 5'11", I think, but is definitely not 5'11". Right. But he's kind of thick, you know, like a thick lower half. Anyway, but yeah, I just thought that comp was, I hadn't heard the name Zach Kristofak in a while. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Georgia, if they're able to find some pieces, they're getting some healthy guys back and they were able to build some depth, you know, while some of these guys were out, especially Goldstein. So that's, you know, that can end up being a positive for them down the stretch to have more options, because we all believe in the offense. It's just, are they going to pitch enough? Then you look at Ole Miss, and they're a team, if they could get to 13 conference wins, which, you know, the schedule down the stretch isn't that difficult. There's some hard games, of course, it's SEC, but they could sneak in. And I think, you know, one of the things is, you know, we mentioned with LSU, you know, that's where Ole Miss finishes. That series could matter a whole lot. The final weekend. Ole Miss has got Alabama this weekend. Alabama's a team that has not done well on the road. Ole Miss got them, you know, in their building. So that's an opportunity really for both of those teams. They probably both feel like they should win that series. And the winner is going to be in, you know, much better shape going forward. I do think that with Ole Miss, they've got to pitch better. More consistently, I would say Liam Doyle's been pretty good. He's had a couple outings he'd like back, but for the most part, he's been good. And then you know, Gunnar Dennis was good, you know, on Sunday. He kind of lost his rotation spot and got a chance to go back into it. And Mason Nichols wasn't quite ready to go. And he was able to pitch well and pitch them to a win. And I do think that's a team that if they pitch, I think their offense is going to be good enough to, especially as they kind of found some guys. Smithwick is playing pretty well, and now that they moved him out to the outfield, there's, you know, defensive catcher is still kind of a concern. being nice, but it was, you know, if they can get some offense to offset some of that and stop kicking the ball around elsewhere on the field. I think they had 4 errors in Friday's game. This is a team that can, you know, that can be in the hunt. And after last year, as bad as things were, you know, just playing meaningful games late in the year, right now you'd probably take it.
Yeah, it strikes me that LSU Ole Miss series to end the regular season might be the most highly anticipated series between two teams well under 500 in conference play in a long, long time.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. The thing about Georgia I find interesting, because I wrote a little bit about for the midweek primer, because they're playing Clemson this week in the midweek. One thing that I will commend Georgia for that always drives me nuts, and look, I try to avoid second guessing any coaching situation, because like I just think it's so frankly absurd that, you know, there folks that do the job that you and I do sit here and, you know, think we could possibly know any better than not only these people who have devoted their lives to coaching baseball, but also like know their team intimately.
Yeah, regardless, they're there every day. We're not.
Correct. Regardless though, one thing that does drive me nuts sometimes is when pitching staffs this time of year start to just shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And you've only got, you know, a handful of guys you're using. Georgia is still actively trying to find guys. Like so they haven't played a midweek game in a couple of weeks, but so they last played a midweek game kind of, let's just call it mid-April, 2 Tuesdays ago. And like roughly half of the pitchers who threw, they threw 8 pitchers, and 3 or 4 of them were guys who had thrown like less than 7 innings on the season. And some of that is like, okay, it's a midweek game. Maybe we just didn't want to use, you know, Brian Zeldin and Josh Roberge and whoever else. But some of that I think is also just, let's use this whole roster and let's keep
giving some opportunities. Right?
Yeah. Let's keep iterating. Cause let's not forget that it was about this time last year that like they had to throw Jarvis Evans onto the mound, mm-hmm. and like he shoved it against Tennessee. Now that ultimately was a team that didn't make the postseason or whatever, but like they found a guy in May because they just put him on the mound. And I get that you can't just totally live like that. Like you do have to manage the games a little bit, but I just don't think it hurts sometimes to cycle through some guys and give some opportunities, even if it's been a while for that pitcher, because sometimes you just don't totally know what you have at all times. And I think they're doing a good job of using the whole roster, which I think started off as necessity and is now turned into a benefit to them to see what else they have.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I do think that Georgia, if they can piece it together with that offense, I mean, that's a team nobody wants to play, because they're just, you know, it's like what we talked about with A&M and Tennessee. When they're rolling, I mean, the balls, it's just a laser show.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's the thing is like, I get people ask me like, why aren't people pitching around Charlie Condon more? Which is like a valid question. Like I'm not dismissing it out of hand, but it's also not like the rest of the lineup is right. It's not like, no disrespect to them, but it's not like Charlie Condon is hitting Missouri's lineup, right? Mm-hmm. Missouri, a team that's hitting like around 200 in conference play. Like this is a good lineup around him. So it's not quite that simple, but also I do understand the question of like, why is he still getting fastballs? So sure. Like I do get it on some level. Mark, that sounds like an episode. We're coming up on an hour here. Feels like we've covered it all. We're getting down to the nitty gritty, folks. Like we talked about, and you may notice as a listener that we talked a lot more in this episode about postseason permutation, RPI. That will only get more so as time goes on. Not that, I mean, we'll still get into the weeds about player performance and matchup and yada, 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 but it will become increasingly about postseason stuff, because that's where we're at. I mean, don't look now, but May is in the horizon. We can see it now. So that will become more pertinent as time goes on. And I know certainly Mark is into that. I'm also big into that stuff. So we're not going to go full bracketology, but that will become an increasing part of it. All right. Well, we will join you at this time next week, wrapping up week 11. I've got another episode of Highway to Hoover later this week, as I always do with a beat writer from around the league. So make sure you tune into that. And we will talk to y'all then. I want to thank PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. Thank you to Mark, as always, for joining me. And thank you, the listener, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on. And if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.